This is Robin Bell, Director of Instrumental Studies at the State College of Florida, and this is the Suncoast Culture Club podcast. Welcome to the club. The Suncoast Culture Club podcast is your weekly dose of what's happening in the performing and visual arts on Florida's Suncoast, including interviews, reviews, discussions, behind-the-scenes tidbits, and insider trading. Join State College of Florida arts faculty as they bring you all of the arts happenings on the Suncoast, from music to dance to art to theater. Come along and join the club. I am very pleased to be talking today to Alfonso Lopez and Michelle Tabor of the Lopez-Tabor Duo, who will be performing in the State College of Florida's new 150-seat recital hall on Thursday, September 16th at 7:30 p.m., and then turning around the next day and teaching a masterclass to the 40 music majors here at SCF. Here we have violinist Alfonso Lopez and pianist Michelle Tabor to tell us all about their lives and careers. Alfonso and Michelle, welcome to the club.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're very happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. We've been like a year without guests on campus. And so this is really nice to have people able to come on campus and work with our students.
We're so happy to be able to return to more normal activities.
I know. We're going to talk about that and how crazy all this COVID has been. Now, Alfonso, you do many things in this musical world, but we might best sum it up by calling you the concertmaster for the Venezuelan Symphony Orchestra. And I'm going to let you jump off from there and tell us, what else do you do in this career and how did you get to this point?
Well, I was 7 years old when I started playing the violin in Venezuela. I grew up in Venezuela, but went to Interlochen, Michigan.
Oh, in Michigan.
Yes, okay. I went there for 2 summers.
Okay, let me ask you this. Did someone just say, here, you're going to learn violin? Or did you go, I have to study the violin?
My dad was a music lover, and we listened to a lot of classical music at home. Mm-hmm. And so when I was about 7 years old or so, my dad said, I want you to play the violin. So I gave it a try and I liked it.
And you had a teacher at 7 years old, like a private teacher?
I went to a private school where music was taught by a Czech violinist whose name was Emil Friedman. Okay. So he was my major violin teacher then. And of course, I studied harmony, theory, solfege, some history. I traveled to Interlochen for a summer. Then I got my high school diploma from Interlochen Arts Academy.
Okay, so you went there for high school?
For 1 year. I got my high school diploma in Venezuela. Then I moved to Interlochen and got my high school diploma in Interlochen. And then went to University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
Oh, I bet that was a climate change from Venezuela to Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Coming from the tropics to a horrible winter. Yeah, it was pretty hard. So I went to a great school where I studied composition with 2 great composers, William Albright, William Bolcom, Michael Dougherty.
Yep. I love Michael Dougherty's music.
Yeah, he's great.
He's also like 8'4".
Yeah, he's in a basketball player type.
He is a giant in many ways, in our business and in physically.
Right.
Yeah.
And my teacher, Paul Cantor, was a great violin teacher who's been all over the place. He's now teaching at Rice University. So I got my master's in performance and composition and went back to Venezuela to join the National Symphony Orchestra, the Venezuela Symphony Orchestra, which turned 91 years just this year. We have a long tradition of concerts where we've played with people like Stravinsky. Wow. Yo-Yo Ma has played with us, Itzhak Perlman, and I'm the concertmaster of the orchestra. I've been now for 26 years in the post. doing things. I'm now in the executive board of the orchestra too. I do conduct a lot of concerts in the season, especially the Nutcracker in December.
Yeah, because, you know, nobody wants to do that but the concertmaster of the orchestra.
Yeah, well, I played my first season in 96 as a violinist, so I got a chance to learn really well the music from the inside, you know.
Sure.
In the pit. And then I got to know how the dancers did their tempos, their little pirouettes, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I became the conductor, like, in 2014. I've done more than 50 or so shows of the Nutcracker in Venezuela.
Wow. So you play violin? You teach violin?
I teach violin. I have a youth symphony orchestra in the school where I teach, where I grew up, as a matter of fact, the Friedman School. And I conduct, I compose, I gig, I travel.
Yes, as we say in the music world, you put it all together to build a living for you and your family making music.
Right, yeah. And I enjoy myself most of all.
You enjoy yourself.
I never get bored.
Absolutely. That's so important. Now, Michelle, you live in Tallahassee, Florida.
Yes.
You're kind of close here. Well, was it 5 hours close?
Something like that.
Uh-huh. And you make your living as a piano player.
Actually, I don't know if you would say living, but I went to school there and my intention was to find a job teaching at a college.
Okay, you wanted to be a college piano teacher.
Yes.
And tell us where you grew up and how you ended up in Tallahassee.
Well, I grew up in Caracas, in Venezuela, and my father was an American who went to Venezuela to work in the oil industry, and he stayed for 30 years.
Okay. But and he married your mother, who was a Venezuelan. Okay.
That's right.
So do you have dual citizenship?
Yes, I do.
Congratulations. It just means you pay more taxes.
Yes, well, I call myself a half and half.
Got it. Yeah. And so when did you start playing piano?
Well, when I was 7, my mother just thought it would be very nice if I would start taking piano lessons.
Both of you, 7 years old.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So, and you had a piano in your house already?
Well, they got one.
Okay.
They got one for me.
Nice. And some good folks there.
Yes. And I started taking piano lessons, and I never stopped. And they didn't have to make me practice. In fact, my mother tells me I would repeat things and repeat things and repeat things and kind of drive them crazy, but they tried not to discourage me.
Yeah, yeah. So you went all the way through high school in Caracas?
Yes.
And then did you end up going to Florida State for your college degree?
No, I went to Tulane University.
Oh, yes, in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Tulane.
For my bachelor's degree. That's when I came to the U.S.
Okay.
When I started college.
And both of you, when you came, you, Alfonso, to Interlaken, and you, Michelle, to Tulane, did you already speak pretty fluent English?
Yes.
Of course, with your dad being an American, you probably had English.
She did. I didn't.
You did not.
I did not.
Whew, yeah. That's tough.
Yeah. I'm still learning.
Me too. Okay, so you got your undergraduate at Tulane.
Yes.
In piano performance.
In piano performance. And then I got a master's degree in piano performance from the University of Denver.
Oh, wow. Another cold place.
Yes. And then I went to FSU for my doctorate. And there I decided to diversify because if I was going to teach at a small college, I needed to know more, I thought, more than just play the piano. So I majored in theory.
Oh, wow. My brain oozes out my ear when I think about doctoral theory classes. No, thank you.
But I never stopped playing. I was always taking like 1 hour of chamber music or something like that when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't play as much as I had, but I kept playing. So.
But your training as a pianist is mostly in solo literature, or did you focus on collaborative pianoing, they call it, or you know, accompanying, or what you just did whatever they put in front of you?
Well, whatever they put, but at first, well, most of the time it was solo literature.
Okay.
And it was just that as I was growing up, I felt a little deprived because I would see other people in orchestras and bands, mm-hmm. and they were in big groups, and I was always by myself in a practice room.
Yes, being a piano player can be very lonely. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And when I started playing chamber music, I loved it, and I've just gone to that. Totally.
And so you went to Florida State for your doctorate and you still live there. So you must have found something appealing about Tallahassee. It kept you grounded there.
Yeah, my plan was to find a job teaching at a college somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know where. But before I graduated, I met this very nice gentleman.
Oh, who, it's always about love.
And he teaches physics at FSU. So I stayed.
Okay. And so what do you do? What does a typical day for Michelle, the piano player, look like now?
Well, actually, just about all my energy goes into the Lopez-Tabor duo, because I need to spend a lot of time looking for concerts, sending proposals. That's a never-ending job.
You're the agent for the group.
I guess you would say that.
Yeah. So then that brings me to my next question is, you're both from Venezuela. It looks like you kind of took divergent paths. How did you come together as a duo in this format where you tour now annually?
I had a violin partner in Venezuela, and he would come here to perform with me. But then when things started to change politically, he could not get a visa to come to the States.
I see.
And this was the year 2004. And I already had like 6 concerts lined up.
Mm.
So I went into a kind of a panic, as you can imagine.
Right. Not just anybody can jump in.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So I called several people in Caracas. And I also tried to find a violinist here in the States. And this one gentleman named Florian Ebersberg, who ran a very important chamber music series in Caracas, told me, "Don't worry," because I had been looking for a while and I was really panicked. And it was
you hate it when people say that? Don't worry. They have no idea. You're like, what?
He said, yeah. "I know several violinists who have visas, so I can find you someone." I thought he was so nice that he would take the time and trouble to help me. I really appreciated that. This was like, I called maybe around 9 in the morning. He said, "I have already contacted Alfonso Lopez, and he is to let me know by 11. And if I don't hear from him by then, I'll contact someone else." And he said, "Just check your email and see what happens." So about 11:30, I was very fearful, but I checked. And he said, "Alfonso Lopez said he will do it. His cell number is this. His home number is this. Call him." So I did. And we talked. And I FedExed him the music.
Mm-hmm.
And this was August. And the concerts were in September.
Oh. Luckily, Alfonso's very good.
So, and we had to arrange the trip and all, because there are so many arrangements that you have to make. But we put it together. And
so, Alfonso, how do you get this time off to come on this tour every year?
The orchestra is not in session, or the school. We have a break in August, and our vacations in December are kind of long. You know, we like to celebrate our Christmas. So the orchestra actually starts again in the end of January. So I get to travel in September with Michelle and January also. So we play about maybe 20 concerts per year or so.
Very nice. And so you just kind of rehearse on your own, and then you come a little early, you get together, rehearse together.
Exactly. Like a week before or so.
And you guys been doing this, as you said, since 2004. Mm-hmm. So you have quite the repertoire to choose from. And we're going to talk about your concert that you're going to be doing here at the State College of Florida and the programming. But do you find it a challenge to find new pieces to add to your expanding repertoire every year?
Well, the repertoire is huge. The literature is great. I mean, there's Mozart, Brahms, Beethoven sonatas. And of course, there's the Latin American repertoire and the Spanish repertoire. You know, so many composers like Albéniz, De Falla, Granados.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I love about you guys coming here, because this is your second performance here at the State College of Florida. You were in the Neal Performing Arts Center when you were here. Was it 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now you're going to be literally the very first performance in our new hall. It's so exciting. But what I love about your programming is that it covers all of that, because we don't normally have people that come in and play this rich Latin Spanish heritage music. And it's so important to expose our students to it. And of course, you know it so well. You know, it's in your blood, as they say.
Nowadays, there's violin and piano duos all over the world. And what makes us different is the repertoire. You know, we're able to play European classical repertoire, and then we're able to do the other stuff, you know, like Latin American pieces from Cuba, from the Dominican Republic, from Venezuela, from Spain, and kind of bring the folk part of our music into the classical realm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's what really appeals to me in sharing this to our students and with our community. So let's talk about your program. You sent me the program for the recital you're going to perform here on Thursday, September 16th at 7:30. And let me just say, if anyone listening goes to the App Store on their phone or mobile device, they can download the SCF Music app and actually already see the program. It's there for you to view right in the palm of your hand as we speak right now. You should get the SCF Music app. This year, the SCF Music app will be the only way actually for you to see our programs for all of our performances. So go ahead and download it now. But this program has so much diverse music on it, from a Baroque selection by Corelli to a Russian sonata by Prokofiev and some American composers. We're going to hear Aaron Copland's Hoedown, Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story, and then top it off with this Latin set, including Malagueña, a barcarolle, and a Spanish dance. I think you guys about cover it all. When you sit down to plan the music for your tour, how do you pick such a wide-reaching program?
I guess we just start talking about it, and we start throwing out names of pieces, or one of us will say, I really would like to learn this one or play this one. And it's not really a difficult process at all when we start discussing this.
But it's intentional, like you were saying. I mean, you've got...
We have a recipe.
You have a recipe. Mm-hmm. You have this, the Italian classic masters. You have the American composers. Mm-hmm. And then you have, I call it the Latin set, because it just runs the gamut. And nowhere else are you going to see that many Latin composers and pieces, right? And your program kind of goes in that order to finish off with the Spanish flair.
That's right. And as a duo, we're very fortunate because Alfonso is a very good arranger. And sometimes I'll say to him, I'd love to play like El Manicero. Can you make us an arrangement of that? And so he'll go off and do it. And then he produces a piece for us to play.
Yeah.
In your spare time, Alfonso.
When I travel, for example, hotel nights can be long sometimes and lonely. So I get to work.
You and your little computer. Do you use Finale or Sibelius?
Finale. Okay. Yeah. You know, once you start with Finale, it takes so much time to learn.
Yeah.
Everyone says Sibelius is better, but I just don't want to do it anymore, you know.
Oh, sure. The programs are similar in a lot of ways, but like I'm a Sibelius user for the same reason I don't go learn Finale, because I've been with Sibelius from the start. I know all the shortcuts.
Yeah.
Super simple. Right. If someone said, you have to learn Finale, you know, maybe give me a year before I could put a note in. So I totally get that. Yeah. But thank goodness we have that. I'm sure you remember the days of handwriting out your manuscripts.
I used to use ProComposer.
Okay. And before, never heard of that one.
Yeah. And then I was born in 72, so I'm a...
You're only 2 years older than me, my friend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I used to use a Commodore 64, imagine. And back then, I used to have music programs, notation programs, and I still have my music printed. And so, yes, I've been at it for a long time.
And do you guys find when you go to put together a program, maybe you're learning new music, the Corelli, the Prokofiev, many things, but do you find that learning the new Spanish Latin style music is a little easier to you, comes more naturally?
Well, especially when you have to play it on stage, it's clear for the audience or for a musician, when I play my own work or my own arrangement or a tango, it feels more natural than playing a Beethoven sonata. You know, of course, I have the training to play in the style of Beethoven or in the style of Mozart, which is not the same, or a Baroque composer. The way you use vibrato is not the same, or the way you end phrases or the way you attack with your bow is different.
It's always a whole different approach to playing the piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But of course, when you see me play a Latin piece, then people realize, oh, he knows what he's doing, you know?
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. This is music we've heard all our lives. It's just around us, everywhere, all the time. Even though we're not from Argentina, for example, we've heard tangos all our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Right. It's like the Germans playing the Strauss waltzes. Uh-huh. They know the little, or our bands that play a Sousa march. There are just certain things that you know automatically to put in that's not on the printed page. And that's how you guys play this Latin music.
Well, if you play a waltz in the Viennese style, you know, the 1, 2, three, one, two,
right.
Three.
The hiccup.
One, two. Right. Yeah. And so how do you do that if you're not from there? You know, well, I guess you can imitate it, but it will never be the same as being the real Viennese thing, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. And what is something about a Latin piece that you guys would inherently know that, say, maybe my students being from America would not know to do?
I would say one of the biggest differences is the rhythms. And also we dance them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we go have social gatherings, mm-hmm. which
there's movement to it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
what they call the groove.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you groove it? You know,
yeah.
How do you play it with flair and flavor and with grace?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, we have a really good Hispanic population here in our music program. We have a lot of Latin students, and I'm very excited for them to hear this program because of that, because oftentimes them growing up in the public schools here in America and they've been the band or orchestra programs, I think in their families, they probably experienced this, but here at the college or through music education, maybe not. So I'm really excited for them to hear that and share that with you. Do you have a favorite piece on the program? One that like you're like, oh, I can't wait to play this one.
Well, you know, it's like having a meal.
Right. I like the mashed potatoes best.
Right.
Yeah.
Some people like dessert.
Yeah.
Some people like the main course, the entree. But I guess as a performer, you like the journey. It's a musical journey. Mm-hmm. We start in Italy, then we go to Russia, and then we travel to the States and play the great music of Bernstein. That theme from West Side Story, Somewhere, is so beautiful, so breathtaking, so heartfelt. And then we go to the Caribbean and we play different pieces, and then we play my own composition in the end. It's a great musical journey.
All right, you're doing the same program. How many times are you performing it on your tour here in Florida?
Maybe like 8 or 10 times. And then we usually play the same program for a whole year or in 2 consecutive tours. And
okay.
Then we change.
And do you find over the course, let's just say you're going to play it 10 times here, kind of sequentially. Do you find that by the time you get to the 10th one, the music has changed from maybe the first performance for you?
Yes.
Yeah?
Definitely.
How so?
I guess it grows with us. And also when we play it together, it's like we understand each other's musical ideas better, and it just keeps changing. It evolves.
Which is the best thing about being a musician, right? If I'm an artist and I paint Mona Lisa, she looks the same every time for centuries. But a piece of music, every time it's played, it's different. And even with 2 people playing it, it just continues to grow and change.
Yes. Yes.
It's a living thing.
It is.
And of course, the halls where we play are all different too.
Yeah.
The acoustics change the way.
It's like baseball.
The pianos are different.
It affects your tempos, your dynamics, your interpretation sometimes.
You know, Michelle, I teach a music appreciation class, and there's one discussion post that they have to do where they talk about choosing instruments. And, you know, if you were going to play, for instance, it's usually in the jazz chapter, and they learn about all the sort of the jazz instruments. And whenever they say piano, I'm going to choose piano, I always remind them, but be careful because you can't pack your piano up and take it with you. And that is very unique. Every place you go, you have to perform on a different instrument. Whereas you, Alfonso, that's your buddy, you know?
Always the same. But the acoustics sometimes are so dry. And on my violin, just it's not like my own instrument.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little difficult. But the piano is a different case.
Yeah.
Michelle can talk about it, perhaps.
Yeah, it's just one of those things a pianist has to learn how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Do you have like a favorite brand of piano that you know when you walk in, if it says Yamaha or Steinway or Baldwin, you're like, oh, I'm at home here?
Not exactly, because each piano is different.
Mm-hmm.
But the Steinways are wonderful, Yamahas in general, wonderful. Bösendorfer pianos are wonderful.
I'm not familiar. It sounds German.
It's Austrian.
Okay, close. So,
that's my piano, is a Bösendorfer.
Okay.
But if I didn't have that, I think I would have a Steinway.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we actually, someone just called us last weekend here at the college. Her mother has passed away, lives in Venice, Florida, has a Steinway piano, wants to make a donation, you know, this kind of thing. So we have gathered, I think we have 3 or 4 now this maybe be our fourth in our collection. Some we pay a little bit of money for, or they get here and we have to pay some money to have them sort of brought up to speed, you know. But it's a unique place, being Sarasota so cultural, the number of people that move down here with their fine, fine instruments. And it's not just pianos. We have French horns, trumpets, violins that are donated. It's amazing, our instrument inventory, and how that grows because of, you know, people expiring and the families don't know what to do with these instruments, you know. So that's one of the piano you're going to be playing on Thursday, September 16th, is one of those. It is a Steinway piano.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I hope you like it.
I'm sure I'll love it.
Play all the wrong notes out of it, okay? So we have actually been talking about doing this program, you guys coming here, for 2 years. We had it on the schedule. The world shut down. We canceled all of that, moved it to this year. But tell us, what did COVID look like for you as musicians? How did your life change?
Well, I did a lot of practicing in the morning, as always, so that part never changed.
Okay, good.
But I did a little more online work. I did some interviews on my YouTube channel. I published some of my activities at home on my Instagram account. I wrote some ideas on my Facebook page. And
so you stayed connected virtually?
Oh, yeah, I did.
But the Venezuelan Symphony Orchestra shut it down.
We didn't do anything. Perhaps a couple of recordings online, too.
Mm-hmm. That's tough. That's like audio, video engineering. That's not hard. Really performing together.
And my schoolwork was online, too. I had to teach my students through a camera. It was really hard because the internet connection is not that great down there. And, of course, it's never the same when you have your student in front of you and you're able to show him how to play, how to sound, how to play with better intonation.
Yes, hand position and hold. Yeah,
oh, sure.
Really hard to see and hard to demonstrate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Our piano teachers have told us the same thing, and really hard. And then when you're dealing with a student that has a piano at home and it maybe hasn't been tuned, it's like, how do I even get through this lesson?
Right.
Yeah. Now, here in Sarasota, the orchestra, so I don't know if it was through donations or through reserves, but they were actually able to continue to pay the musicians 80%, I believe, of their salary, plus keep their medical benefits. Mm-hmm. Was the Venezuelan Symphony Orchestra able to continue to pay you guys?
Yes, but not a significant salary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah, the economic situation down there is not the best right now, but a lot of musicians find a way to do other things outside the orchestra. So, like, I have a teaching job, and I get to do this tour with Michelle in the States, and that gives me a little bit of air to breathe. But I did listen to a lot of opera, too, because I love opera as well. And, of course, I got to see what other symphony orchestras in the world were doing, because we're all in the same position, you know.
What about Michelle? What did COVID look like for you and your household? Because your husband is still teaching at FSU.
He's still teaching there. Yes.
Did he have to go all online?
He had to do it all online or via Zoom, but he was still going on campus. Professors could go, but the students were not allowed on campus. Mm-hmm. And so his work basically continued, but just in a different format. With me, as I was saying to somebody who asked me, I didn't stop practicing. That part of my work continued unchanged, but we just couldn't perform.
Right.
So,
yeah. It was funny here because we actually had classes in person and we had rehearsals and we gave performances, but they didn't allow any audience members. So our staff learned how to live stream on Facebook, but it was so weird. Like the first concert, it was great. I mean, some of the best performances ever and programming ever in my career happened during the pandemic. And it was sad because I didn't feel like there was many people there. But I remember the very first piece we played without an audience, and we get to the last note. I mean, it's a stinger, exclamation point. And there's like no applause. You're like, oh, this is weird. I told the students, I would imagine it'd be like performing on a film set or, you know, for some place where you don't have a live audience. Musicians really do this all the time. We're just not accustomed to it. You know?
Yeah.
Now, the day after your recital, so on Friday the 17th, you are going to be giving a masterclass to a violinist and a pianist, music majors here at the college. And I know you're very passionate about music education. So what words of advice would you give a first or second year music major in today's world, having lived through this pandemic? What does it take to make money and a decent living in the realm of classical music making?
Well, try to think about different options always. Try to project yourself into the future of information. You know, now we live in a world where YouTube has it all. You want to know how to fix a washing machine?
You go on YouTube. YouTube it.
Mm-hmm. And so
I did that just yesterday, actually.
All right.
No, I didn't.
And so, of course, try to stay active, play your scales, your etudes, your concertos, but also look for information, know about the history of composers you play, think about maybe teaching as an option always, because a performer will always have students as a way to have other means of getting some cash.
And leaving your legacy. Very important.
And that too, that's more important.
Yeah.
Well, in my case, you know, I teach students, but also conduct a youth symphony orchestra. Mm-hmm. I play concertmaster in my symphony, but also do Nutcracker in December and conduct other things. I play recitals, violin and piano. I play string quartets, string trios.
Mm-hmm. Anything that comes your way.
Right. So chamber music is a great option too.
And you compose and arrange. You earn money from that as well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And even more when you say now, for these students, and I'm going to tell you, they know more about it than I do, so I don't need to be preaching, but certainly the technical aspect of where music is going and how we share music, and also that entrepreneurial, I mean, you are the agent for the Lopez-Tabor duo, that entrepreneurial spirit of going out and making the connections and finding the gigs, right? Very important.
Yeah, finding the way to make it happen is what you need to do. And I would say to be in the field of music, especially performing, you need to be prepared to work very, very hard and be very dedicated and disciplined. And then for a pianist, I guess some options are opening up your own private studio and teaching. Or I don't know what opportunities there would be in the public school system. I think that's more for the
Large ensembles
and bands and things.
When you do the master class, Michelle, you're going to be working with a young lady named Maria Medina, and she is I hope you find her to be a wonderful pianist. She's from Cuba, and she works on classical music mostly. But this semester, she's joined the jazz band.
Wonderful.
Yes. So that's important, right? Being able to play in those different styles.
Yes.
If you can improv and comp and or musical theater, so many pit orchestras, especially for pianists. I mean, I can't get a musical theater pit orchestra job because I don't play piano. I can conduct all day, but they want someone that can play piano, rehearse with singers.
And I've known pianists who have church jobs and then to augment their income, they do things like play in hotels, for example, and other places like that.
Yeah, you got to piece it together. Mm-hmm. I think you two are quintessential in that. We could have a masterclass on just putting a career together as musicians. You know, it's quite inspiring to our students to see people that do this. Thank you for sharing that with our students. Now, we talked about Michelle's piano. The Bordenhorger Songer? What's it called?
I don't say it's someone who speaks German would say something like Busendorfer.
Busendorfer?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Alfonso, people are always interested in violins because there's the strata. Oh, I play on a $1 billion violin. What instrument do you play on?
I play on a Joseph Curtin violin made in Ann Arbor, Michigan, 1999. He's one of the great
contemporary violin makers.
Yes.
Yes. Have you ever played on one of these really old Stradivarius?
I have played a Strad and a Guarnieri violin, and an Amati violin as well.
But this is your choice. You love this one.
I just couldn't afford to pay for a Strad. But Curtin is a great maker. He actually made a beautiful Strad copy for me. I'm really happy with it.
How many violins do you own?
I have three or four. I say or four because one of them is played by my daughter.
Oh, yeah. How sweet. Yeah. Do you teach her?
I do. Cool. She doesn't like to be taught by me, though.
That's tough.
You know, it's hard when you have kids. They don't want to hear you tell them how to do things, you know?
Yes, I do.
So,
I mean, I don't have kids, but I know it as powdered butt syndrome.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. So I have two daughters. Erica, the eldest one, plays violin and viola. She's actually playing now better viola than violin.
That's a very good skill to have, to be able to do both of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she has long fingers. She's kind of big and athletic. So I think viola is good for her.
Yeah.
And then my 13-year-old is playing cello, and she's doing great.
Okay.
My brother.
So you could have like a trio, a family trio.
My father-in-law plays violin. So we do play quartets at home.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, we use this podcast to talk about music and cultural arts events, theater, visual art as well. But I'm a foodie at heart. And we often say, okay, people that live in the area, what's your favorite restaurant to go to? This kind of thing. But I'm going to twist this around for you guys a little bit. So let's say I come to Caracas, Venezuela, and you're going to have me in your home for dinner, which I really hope happens one day. What is the quintessential Venezuelan meal?
Papillon, I think.
I would have to tell you arepa.
Arepa.
Yeah. Arepa. Arepa is like a pre-cooked corn flour. You kind of put it on the grill.
On a griddle,
and then you put inside chicken, shredded chicken.
It's like a tortilla kind of thing.
Yeah, it's thicker.
Corn flour.
It's thicker. It's thicker.
Nice.
Yeah, you can fill it with ham or spam. I don't know.
Are there particular Venezuelan spices that you would add to the food that makes it taste a little different than, say, an American chicken quesadilla or whatever?
Yeah, I guess guasacaca.
Guasacaca
is like our guacamole.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What are you going to make at your house?
I was telling him another very typical dish is called pabellón. How would you translate that?
I think they call it dirty clothes.
Dirty clothes?
Dirty clothes. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't sound too good.
It's a shredded beef and rice and black beans.
Okay.
And plantains.
And plantains. Oh, God.
Give fried plantains.
Bring the plantains. I eat them all day and night. Uh-huh. Delicious.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
I just can't wait. Okay. So let's say that folks listening want to follow your careers or learn more about you and your duo. Where can they go to get that information?
Well, we as a duo have a webpage. It's www.lopeztaborduo.moonfruit.com. It's a little long.
Okay.
But we also have a Facebook page.
Yes.
Lopez Tabor Duo. Or if you want to follow me, you can go on Instagram and type Alfonso Lopez CH, and you'll find me there and in Twitter.
Oh, you do Twitter.
Yeah,
You're a brave man.
I do Twitter.
Yeah. You know what? We'll put links to all these in our show notes.
Okay.
So if people can, if they're listening on the web, they can see our show notes, they can just click and jump right to your pages and your social media.
Asking about how to promote your career, I think you have to do social media.
Totally.
Because if you're not on social media, then you don't exist. I mean, you can play very well, but if you're not on there,
nobody's going to know you.
Look at Perlman. It's like Perlman's doing a lot of even cooking shows, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
I did not know this.
I didn't either.
Yeah. So, and he, of course, plays and tells jokes.
Yes. He's a funny guy.
Yeah, very funny. Yeah.
Well, we are really looking forward to the two of you performing this incredible program for us in the brand new recital hall located right next to the Neal Performing Arts Center on the Bradenton campus of the State College of Florida. That's at 5840 26th Street West in Bradenton, near the Bayshore Gardens Target and across the street from IMG, as I like to say. You can get your tickets for this concert by going to scf.edu/Neal. That's N-E-E-L, or at the door the night of the performance. They are only $15, but all students at SCF and from Manatee and Sarasota County Schools, plus all SCF faculty and staff, can get a ticket for only $5 at the door. Just show your school ID. It's that simple. Alfonso and Michelle, thank you for sharing your music talents and time with our community.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you for being an inspiration for musicians, too. I follow your career as well on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I see you very active. This podcast idea is great.
Thank you.
I hope you continue to...
I'm hoping to get some sleep next week.
Okay.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Suncoast Culture Club podcast. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram at Suncoast Culture Club. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. That helps a lot. But most importantly, head over to our website, suncoastcultureclub.com. While there, you can send us a message requesting we cover a certain person, organization, or event. And then you can choose the Support tab to make a donation to the State College of Florida Foundation to help support the SCF Arts Education students and programs. You can also choose the Join the Club tab to make a donation directly to the podcast. And don't forget to check out our Calendar of Events page through the website to see all the arts happenings in Sarasota and Bradenton. Thank you for joining our club. Stay well. This has been Robin Bell.